people can either go back to their homes, and some people are going back to their homes, or if they are displaced, they are under a shelter. And you know, many are not. Many are out in the open, sleeping rough.
Analysts point out that the real problem in Afghanistan is deteriorating economy, as Afghan financial system has been dependent at least 60% on foreign aid. With the change of guard in Kabul, the Western countries and the UN have resumed funding, which is far less than what the new government requires to stabilize the fragile economy. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
One of the world's largest democracies, and on the wall of the parliament, which represent democracy, there is a sentence which reads, Vasudeva Kutumbakam. It means the world is one family, and this is considered the most important moral value of the Indian society. But this is apparently not the case anymore, considering the growing discord in the society. In recent months, attacks against Muslim hawkers have come under the spotlight in social media. Critics say hate crimes against Muslims increased after the emergence of the Hindu nationalist government of the ruling BJP.
In India, from over close to a decade, the Muslim poor community is being further marginalized. This is being done by boycotting the Muslim hawkers and small Muslim traders.
Experts say in India the political notion has changed from a strong secular nation to a theocratic Hindu nation, which has given rise to violence against Muslims. Now Hindu extremists have been busy running this show through social media. Experts say the country, which is apparently known as the world's largest democracy, is under grave danger of losing this title. In a nation of diverse ethnic and religious groups, now even beggars are being humiliated and intimidated just because of their faith, and are asked to leave the country since they are Muslims. Based on reports by several rights groups, since the ruling BJP came to power in 2014, it has adopted various laws and taken actions that legitimize discrimination against the religious minorities and stigmatize critics of the government. Experts believe it could lead to instability in the world's most populous nation.
Everything is being done to further marginalize Muslims, including hate speeches, hate crimes, mob lynching, the citizenship law, criminalizing divorce, extra. Now they are picking on traders and vendors to weaken the Muslim community economically.
The ruling party of the Prime Minister Modi has fervently denied any discrimination against the community, saying India is a democracy and believes in equal rights for all. But critics say Prime Minister Modi's slogan of everyone together, development for all, and everyone's trust is nothing but a political tool to appease the voters as usual. Munawar Zaman, Press TV, New Delhi.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip took part in Friday prayer in front of the headquarters of the Red Cross. The event, organized by different Palestinian factions, aims to support Palestinian prisoners who are subjected to Israeli abuse.
We are here to stress that we will not disappoint our Palestinian prisoners, and we will keep supporting them. Our prisoners are passing through difficult times inside the jails as the regime is attacking the prisoners, especially Islamic Jihad members.
Meanwhile, Palestinians consider the recent heroic escape operation of six prisoners from an Israeli jail as a slap in the face of Israel.
We are doing our best to release Palestinian prisoners, and this is an oath that we should stick with until all Palestinian inmates are free. We are working round the clock to hold meetings and put plans so we can liberate our prisoners and have them run us and with their families. Our resistance made a firm decision that the six Palestinian inmates that escaped Jilbo prison are on top of any coming exchange deal.
The Palestinian resistance mentors the behavior of the Israeli regime towards the prisoners inside the jails and those who remain free, demanding the international institutions to put pressure on Israel regarding the prisoners' issue.
The issue of our inmates inside Israeli jails is ongoing, and there are still two of the six heroic escapees out of the Israeli prison. We are here to express our total support for those inmates and all Palestinian prisoners who are fighting to achieve their demands.
Palestinians here stress they will remain committed to their duty of supporting prisoners and demanding their release. The issue of Palestinian inmates is a priority for Palestinians, who will keep demanding their release until they regain complete freedom. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Demonstrations have hit Aden and other cities in southern Yemen. The protests came in response to the deterioration of public services and widespread poverty within areas controlled by the Saudi-led coalition's forces. But the demonstrations were met with a crackdown and resulted in deaths and injuries of protesters.
It is clear that the Saudi-backed regime has failed in handling of the economy, and this is what prompted people to go out and demonstrate in the southern governorates. The price of the dollar in Aden is two times more than what it is in Sana'a, and this confirms that former fugitive president Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi is implementing the agenda of the Saudi-led coalition, which seeks to control Yemeni lands and destroy the country.
The governor of Aden, Tariq Salam, said what is happening in southern cities is the revolution of the poor that will only end with the departure of all the forces of the Saudi-led coalition, including the Emirati-backed Southern Transitional Council, which controls the city of Aden.
Yemenis took to the streets of Aden to create a major popular uprising aimed at confronting the Emirati occupation authorities. And this is a result of the suffering experienced by the people of Aden due to the absence of public services, such as electricity, inflation, and high prices. This is the revolution of the hungry, and it will end when all the Saudi coalition's forces leave Yemeni lands.
6 years ago, the Saudi-led coalition occupied several cities in southern Yemen, including Aden. Since then, these areas have been paralyzed by a power struggle between the Saudi-backed Hadi government and the UAE-backed Southern Transitional Council.
The catastrophic situation in southern regions of Yemen has pushed people there to stage out and demand expelling the foreign powers. Observers say people have come to realize that the Saudi-led coalition's presence has only increased the misery in their country, where more than 20 million people rely on aid. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Since the beginning of the struggle for independence in Indian-controlled Kashmir in 1989, journalists in the troubled region have worked in dangerous conditions. The fraternity has often faced tremendous pressure from all sides, while many journalists lost their lives in the line of duty. New Delhi stripped Kashmir of its special status in 2019. Since then, the fraternity has accused the Indian administration in Kashmir of using intimidation, surveillance, interference and policing.
I think this is an attempt to treat journalists as enemy, the adversarial relationship that is there between the organs of the state and media as a fraternity is very adversarial at the moment since last 2-3 years. And this is a result of, you know, when you treat journalists whose only job is to tell story and who are storytellers and who are not responsible for the story. They are treating, as we call the shooting the messenger.
According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, the freedom of speech and expression in Kashmir is under threat. Michelle Bachelet has also criticized India for pressuring journalists and frequent communications blackout in Jammu and Kashmir. However, India has often rejected any criticism relating to Jammu and Kashmir. Editor-in-Chief of Kashmirwala, an independent media outlet of Kashmir, says his organization has several police cases registered against them.
In the last 2 years, we have been multiple times called, summoned, questioned, interrogated or detained. And other than that, there are a lot of other things that happen behind the curtains. You get phone calls, you get people who meet you and they tell you that this thing should not be done, that should not be done. So that creates this sense of fear in you. You always have to look over your shoulder as a journalist at what is going to happen.
The new breed of journalists in Kashmir say journalism has been criminalized by authorities in Kashmir, and many of them, like Asif Amin, are being compelled by their parents to opt for other career options.
Journalists in Kashmir say New Delhi is trying to control media outlets and newspapers. They say their career is in danger. But many analysts believe in an era that almost every individual owns a smartphone and has access to social media, controlling a narrative is impossible. Shahana Bhatt, Internet Minister at Kashmir.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khamenei's televised speech addressing the new wave of coronavirus, August 13, 2021. In any case, efforts should be intensified for both imports and for national manufacture so that officials could provide the vaccine for the people in whatever way possible. Millions of vaccines should become accessible. The next issue is about medication. I've heard that pharmacies and hospitals are lacking in medication, or that medicines are hard to find, but that they are available in the black market at a several times higher price. If this is true, this shows the existence of a fundamental problem in the distribution network. This should be seriously confronted and prevented. Medicines should easily be within the people's reach. The next point is the cooperation of the military forces. In the first months, when the disease had just appeared, the military forces, whether the army or the IRGC, seriously entered the arena and accomplished great feats. The siege cooperated very well. Although they are active in the present time as well, they should use their full potential and help the people. These are the tasks that fall on officials and that are really necessary. They should show no consideration for anyone. I'm not saying this in particular about imposing a lockdown because this is an expert matter and should be examined in the National Anti-Coronavirus Headquarters. However, if they reach a certain conclusion, they should certainly implement it in a firm and decisive manner. As for the people, well, our dear people are faced with this bitter problem. But part of the problem results from the people not observing the protocols. It is said that in some cities, people observe only 35% or 40% of the protocols. Well, this is too little. The people should observe the protocols 100%. Even if some people cannot put on a mask and correctly observe social distancing and the like, the majority of the people should observe them completely. This is a problem that originates from us. If we ourselves do not observe the protocols, we risk our own life and that of others, in particular that of our family members and people close to us. Therefore, part of the problem results from the violation of these protocols. The people should continue to be as sensitive and careful as they were in the first months when the disease had just appeared.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, as a reminder, we talked about Imam Khomeini's message, which he had issued to the seminaries and ulema in the last month of his life. We discussed the Imam's views on the struggles of ulema and their sacrifices in the way of God to awaken people and to confront oppression on the one hand and sanctimony on the other. The Imam has pointed out that the true ulema have always been supportive of the downtrodden and the oppressed strata against tyrannical and puppet rulers. We also discussed Imam Khomeini's warning in his testimony to the seminaries and great ulema against deviation. Stay tuned to follow the discussion. One of the important axes that have been stressed in Imam Khomeini's testimony is the necessity of new organization in the structure of seminaries. The Imam, as a pioneer in this field, believed that if the seminaries did not embark on reform and development under the supervision of the sources of emulation and great ulema, others would step in for the purpose with wicked goals. This had been experienced during the rule of illiterate and ruthless Reza Khan, whose real aim was to obliterate ulema and Islam in Iran. Therefore, during the era of Grand Ayatollah Muhammad Hossein Borujerdi, Imam Khomeini strove to reform the seminaries, especially that of Qom. But he faced obstructionism of opportunities and dogmatic elements who had infiltrated the ranks of clergymen under the guise of benevolent persons. Imam Khomeini was very concerned about reformation of the structure of seminaries, even when he was in exile. Imam Khomeini's warnings during the tough times in Najaf would arouse committed ulema and young students to reform the seminaries. He made all these efforts alongside his struggles for the Islamic revolution. He told the students and ulema, "You will be able to remove these corruptions and difficulties and thwart their colonial schemes only through self-expurgation, preparation, and proper order. If you do not reform yourselves, do not become equipped, and do not make order and discipline rule over your lessons and life, you will be, God forbid, doomed to destruction in the future, before losing the opportunity and before the enemy gains access to all your religious and scientific affairs. Ponder, wake up, and rise up. In the first phase, embark on self-expurgation, purification, and reformation. Become equipped and orderly. Set up order and discipline in seminaries. Do not let others come and make seminaries orderly. Do not let the enemies administer the seminaries with the pretext that these people are not qualified. They cannot do anything, and they are a handful of jobless people who have gathered together in seminaries so that they would corrupt the seminaries in the name of order and reform, and would subjugate you. Do not give them pretext. If you become orderly and self-expurgated, and all your affairs are orderly, others would not have view upon you, and would not find way to infiltrate the seminaries and the community of clergymen. With the victory of the Islamic Revolution and foundation of the Islamic Republic in Iran, naturally, the necessity of new organization in seminaries was highlighted more than ever. As the grounds were set for this purpose, Imam Khomeini was more sensitive on the issue. He writes in his testimony, "I recommend for all eras, especially the current era, as the schemes and plots have become faster and stronger, that the uprising for organization of seminaries is necessary and essential, so that the ulema and great figures would spend time and, through accurate program, preserve seminaries, especially the Qom Seminary and other great and important seminaries against ills in this juncture in time." Another serious concern of Imam Khomeini with regards to the ulema and seminaries was his high emphasis on safeguarding the traditional jurisprudence known as Fiqh-e-Jawahiri or Jawahiri jurisprudence. He writes in his historical message, "As for education and research in seminaries, I believe in the traditional jurisprudence and Jawahiri ijtihad and do not consider as permissible to disregard it. Ijtihad, independent reasoning on the basis of the Quran and Hadith, is correct on the same basis, but it does not mean that the jurisprudence of Islam is not dynamic. Time and place are two determining elements in ijtihad. What used to have an edict in the past, it seems that the same issue may get a new edict in terms of the relations ruling on politics, society, and economy of system. A jurisprudent should smartly and sharply guide a great Islamic and even non-Islamic society, and beside sincerity, God-wariness, and asceticism, which are worth a jurisprudent, should be really a prudent manager." Imam Khomeini points to this issue in his testimony too. "It is necessary that the respectable ulema and teachers not allow lessons that are related to jurisprudence and the jurisprudential seminaries of the grand ulema, which are the only way for preservation of the Islamic jurisprudence, to become deviated and try to increase precision, debate, discussion, and research every day. The traditional jurisprudence, which is the heritage of the righteous predecessors, and deviation from it will weaken the pillars of research and erudition must be preserved and researchers should be increased. Of course, programs will be prepared in other sciences concerning the needs of the country, and Islam and people should be trained in those fields. Dear listeners, next time we will continue discussing Imam Khomeini's view.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kaba Tahway. In as many times, Israel has threatened Iran again. Iran's new defense minister, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Qarai Ashtiani, has reacted strongly, vowing a crushing response to any imprudent move. Why has Israel's war of words against the Islamic Republic intensified in recent months? Well, in this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the reasons behind Israeli threats and the double standard behind their accusations against Iran of pursuing nuclear weapons when the regime itself is sitting on more than 100 nuclear warheads at a minimum. First, let's cross on over to Ramallah to talk to Mona Kandil about the latest threats that are coming. We're looking at the increase, Mona, when it comes to the threats by Israeli officials against Iran. Perhaps you could name some of them. Go ahead, Mona.
Yes, that's right. Israeli officials, the threats against Iran are not stopping. They are continuing. Israel's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Yair Lapid, was in a visit to Moscow, and after a meeting with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, he said that Iran and its nuclear capabilities pose a threat not only to Israel, but also to the whole world. He also tried to show that the whole world has a problem with Iran, not only Israel. And he said he's trying to incite against Iran, saying that the world must act in order to stop Iran from having nuclear capability. And if they don't do this, then Israel reserves the right to act. Before his statements, there were similar statements also from Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, also Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Benny Gantz, also said that he doesn't rule out the possibility that Israel will have to take action against Iran in the future in order to prevent a nuclear Iran. At the time, they are continuing their crimes and continuing to obtain more weapons from the whole world. They are threatening Iran to the extreme, maybe, especially with the continuing and the renewed threats coming from different Israeli political officials.
Thank you very much for that, Monica Ndiol from Occupied Ramallah. Let me bring our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. We have author and former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman, who joins us from Washington. Also joining us, historian, analyst, and author Marcus Papadopoulos, who joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, I'm going to start with you first, Michael Springman, if I may, going with what our correspondent there said, the most recent Israeli threat, and I'm going to quote how Yair Lapid, who went to Moscow earlier this month, said the following: the world needs to stop Iran from getting a nuclear capability, no matter the price. And he added, if the world doesn't do it, Israel reserves the right to act. What do you think he means?
Well, he means that he will, Israel, the apartheid entity, will act against Iran with the support of the United States and attack any nuclear installations or any nuclear scientists that it deems will be necessary to put an end to the imaginary Iranian nuclear program. Iran is enriching uranium to a limited extent. As a result of the Americans breaking the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, and somehow the Americans and their Israeli masters are focused on this in order to divert attention from the colossal number of atomic bombs the Americans have and the outrageous number that the Israelis have, 100, 200, as many as the British do, 300 or 400. Nobody seems to know. And, of course, as long as they keep talking about Iran and Iran's nuclear program and Iran's nuclear weapons that don't exist except in the Israeli mind, if they have a mind, it's going to be more of the same. The best offense is the best defense is a good offense. And the Israelis keep pushing this, and the Israelis and the news media around the world keep doing the same. So you hear only one side of the story. You hear only one bit of propaganda, Hasbara, explaining that the Israelis are so good at.
We're going to talk about some of the other threats that Israel has made against Iran, Marcus Papadopoulos. But basically, it appears that in recent months, Israel's war of wars against Iran has escalated in terms of its threats. At least that's the impression that we have based on the number of threats it has leveled against Iran. Why do you think that it's on the increase?
Well, such is the temerity of the Israeli authorities that they never fail to provoke the ire of right-thinking people across the world. Because here we have Israel, a member of the United Nations, routinely threatening another member of the United Nations, in this case, Iran. such disgusting, despicable behavior runs contrary to the very essence of the United Nations. Indeed, in an ideal world, Israel, along with its patrons, America and Britain, would be expelled from the UN. But, alas, the ideal is not always attainable, and in this case, there is no chance, of course, of Israel or America or Britain being expelled from the United Nations. But it is certainly the case that over the last few months, the threats stemming from Tel Aviv, the tirades of abuse emanating from Tel Aviv against Iran has increased. And whilst there is nothing new to this verbal abuse from Israel and from the threatening language from Israel, whilst it cannot be discounted, on the other hand, I don't believe there's anything for the Iranian government to be unduly concerned about, because it is my submission that Israel is, to put it simply, desperate. Israel understands that Iran is a very strong country with very strong friends and allies in the world. Iran, for instance, has a strategic partnership with Russia. Iran has very close relations with China. The Israelis are also aware that America does not want to become embroiled in a war with Iran. So it is certainly the case that there is no public will or mood in America for a war with Iran. So the Israelis, in my opinion, are desperate. And I would also add as well how ironic, how laughable it is for Israel, a country which has nuclear weapons and which refuses to sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty, is arguing that if Iran develops nuclear weapons, which the Iranian government has no intention of doing, then Tel Aviv will take action against Iran. It is really quite breathtaking, the audacity of the Israelis. But then, Israel is the main conduit for American and British power in the Middle East. Therefore, the American and British establishments, the politicians and the mainstream journalists, allow Israel to get away with whatever it wants, no matter how dangerous and how destabilizing a force Israel is in the Middle East and in the wider world. All that matters to the Americans and the British is that Israel ensures Western supremacy in the Middle East.
Okay. Iran has also said, Michael Springman, that Israel is desperate. But I'd like to zoom in on what Iran's new defense minister has said, General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, about the threats leveled against Iran. He said the enemies of the Iranian nation will definitely receive a crushing response for any imprudent and reckless action that will incur heavy costs. And within that, he also said new technologies and domestic innovations are meant to ensure national security and to respond to any external aggression. Aside from the fact that Israeli threats are against international law, what is your view about the way that Iran has reacted in terms of the rebuttal or their reaction to Israeli threats?
Well, Iran's reaction and its public statements about these maniacal Israeli threats has been remarkably restrained and limited, and not engaged in hyperbole of any kind so much as the Israelis do. It's very clear that when I was in Iran 3.5 years ago, I spoke with a well-connected individual who said that Iran knows exactly what the Israelis and the Americans are doing, and the Israelis and the Americans know Iran's strength, but because of their overweening arrogance, they persist in their threats against Iran, against the United Nations Charter, Article 2. And I think also the man told me that they would, Iran would most likely have a limited response to any provocation or attacks. And it would escalate attacks on Israel and the United States as they escalated their attacks on Iran. And he said ultimately, in the end, they would target the heavily Zionist populations centers of Israel. And, of course, the Americans have all these hostages in the region. 10,000 servicemen at Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar, 20,000 sailors and marines in the 5th Fleet steaming up and down the Persian Gulf, and in Manama, the capital of the repressive and repulsive country, if you can call it that, of Bahrain. So I think, on the whole, Iran has been astonishingly restrained in its responses, and lets the Lord speak for themselves.
Well, this is what then confuses this scenario, Marcus Papadopoulos, when it comes to the one that's leveling these threats, namely Israel. You're looking at a regime of which they recently assassinated an Iranian nuclear scientist using the most recent report indicating they used AI. And some Israeli officials have even bragged about the fact that this operation was carried out. And when you take a look at the response, it's barely there, if any, from the international community, if you want to call it that. You're looking at, again, a regime that's sitting on a pile of nuclear warheads, regime that has carried out assassinations not only within Iran on a number of occasions, but also in other parts of the world. Not a very positive report card. So why is Iran the bad guy, and yet Israel is the one that can go around doing what it's doing?
Well, when we hear the term international community, we are not, of course, referring to the United Nations. No, the international community really refers to Western powers, America, Britain, Canada, France, and Germany. That is who the international community is. And as to why Iran is the country which is vilified, despite the fact that Iran has not attacked another country in modern times, and despite the fact that Iran does not violate the sovereignty of other countries, unlike for Israel, all comes down to the fact that Iran is a strategic partner of Russia's. Iran is the linchpin in the resistance movement to Israeli aggression in the Middle East. And of course, Israel and of course Iran pursues an independent foreign policy and does not submit to the threats and diktats emanating from Washington. And on top of that is the fact that Iran is located in a geostrategic part of the world. Iran's geostrategic importance is absolutely enormous, because if Iran was pursuing an independent foreign policy in an obscure part of the world, then we would not have witnessed the vilification of Iran and the Iranian people by the West that we have witnessed for some 42 years now. It is all because Iran is in a geostrategic part of the world. Iran opposes America. Iran opposes Israel. And that is why Iran is targeted by the West and, of course, Israel. And when it comes to the United Nations, regrettably, many of the bodies which comprise the United Nations have fallen under the influence of the Americans and the British. And as a result of that, those bodies rarely, if ever, castigate Israel, even though Israel feels so emboldened in this day and age.
Well, that's the problem.
That it makes its threats public against any country in the world, such as Syria and Iran.
Well, that's the problem. Israel has become emboldened, but it's been carrying that type of posture, Michael Springman, because it's been allowed to do what it has been doing. It's broken the most UN resolutions. And the rap lists that I mentioned are missing a few other violations that Israel has occurred, even though it hasn't claimed responsibility, but Iran's nuclear facilities have come under attack. We could also talk about the way that Israel obviously violates the rights of Palestinians. That's another crime that's been going on for quite some time. What else can I tell you about Israel in terms of what it's done? We mentioned the assassination of Iran's nuclear scientists. So it reaches a point where Iran, you know, could react to what Israel is saying. The other thing I wanted to mention was how Israel is attacking Syria for, what, 2 or 3 years now at this point, continuously. So here, you have this regime that is capable of carrying out military action. When is that threshold going to pass for Iran, do you think? I mean, where do you think that red line is going to cross?
Well, I think the red line is basically the control of the Western news media by Zionists. I read an article, admittedly it was an old one, recently by Philip Weiss of the website Mondo Weiss, and he said that just about everywhere he worked, in newspapers and in magazines, the people running the show, the editors, the managing editors, and you name it, farther up the line, were all Jews and were all Zionists and all supported Israel. The red line, of course, is when it gets to the point where these people can't support Israel anymore, and I don't think that's going to happen. They will do this no matter what. And as Hafsa Qara Mustafa said just the other day in another edition of Spotlight, the Western media and the Western governments cannot stand to see a powerful Muslim nation defying the Western view of how things should be and Western control of their internal politics, of their internal economies. And as long as these countries, such as Iran, are opposed to this, they will be targeted by the Western media and by the Western governments. So I think the red line really is wherever they want to put it, and if they can get away with destroying Iran, they will try, but it will come at a tremendous price. And the Americans still don't realize that Israel is their oldest enemy and greatest debtor. They went back in 1954 and burned U.S. Information Service offices in Egypt, burned the American consulate in Alexandria. They destroyed the USS Liberty, a National Security Agency signals intelligence ship. And you've had people blinded by folks demonstrating against the attacks on the Palestinian supply convoys led by the Mavi Marmara. Right. So the Americans will take it and let the Israelis kill them and steal their money and don't care about the rest of the world, let alone Iran. So sure. I think that there's sure. no real red line there.
Well, the thing that also is perplexing, I know you have a reaction there, but I'd like to ask this question from you, Marcus Papadopoulos, if I may, because it always is somewhat of a mystery here. And Israel has said on many occasions throughout the past years, and during previous U.S. administrations headed by different U.S. presidents, that if the U.S., I mean, going back at least as far as Barack Obama, that if the U.S. does not do something about Iran, that Israel will go ahead anyways with or without the U.S. support and attack Iran. How true do you think that is?
Well, if Israel is meaning that it would carry out a surprise air raid over the skies of Iran, targeting sensitive Iranian military installations, then yes, I believe that is very possible, and I think that is well within the means of the Israelis. If, of course, the Israelis are talking about conducting a sustained military offensive against Iran, then I find that very difficult to believe that the Israelis would venture down that road, so to speak, because there is enormous distance separating Israel and Iran. They are not borders. They are not neighbors. And therein would pose a logistical nightmare for the Israelis if they were intent on conducting a sustained military operation against Iran. But, as I said moments ago, if they are talking about carrying out surprise air raids against Iran, then yes, that is possible. But allow me to shed another dimension to Israel. During the conflict in Syria, Israel publicly, openly treated al-Qaeda fighters who had been wounded in battle against the Syrian army. And let us not forget that al-Qaeda was responsible for the massacring of civilians in New York, in Washington, in Madrid, in London, in Bali, and so on and so on. And yet here we have Israel treating wounded Al-Qaeda fighters in Israeli hospitals. But then that should not come as a surprise, because as a former director of Mossad said only a few years ago, Al-Qaeda is not an enemy of Israel's. And we also know that Al-Qaeda has never once threatened to attack Israel. Indeed, Al-Qaeda has never used any profanities, has never used any denigrating language about Israel. So it is very clear that there is an unofficial alliance between Israel and Al-Qaeda, as there is an unofficial alliance between the Americans and the British and Al-Qaeda.
Final question goes to you, Michael Springman. All of this is happening in terms of the threats, at least the most recent ones, by Israel against Iran, during the time that at this point nuclear talks, if they are going to be continuing, that it's still something that's alive, even though it's on life support. Do you, and many are saying that, you know, Israel is trying to make sure that the U.S. does not succumb and bring Iran back to the table and have a deal made. Do you think that that is the intent that Israel has?
Well, Israel, yes, certainly doesn't want a deal, because they want to keep pointing the finger at the wicked and evil Iran that is supposedly developing all these nuclear weapons in fact, isn't. So the Israelis don't want a deal. The American government, with Joe Biden and his Zionist State Department and CIA and Director of National Security, are all opposed to Iran. They keep putting condition after condition up there, insisting that Iran submit to controls on its missiles, that Iran submit to the range of its missiles, that Iran stop supplying fuel to Lebanon, which no other country is doing so far. They're doing their best to alleviate the suffering of the Lebanese people. They support Syria and the attempts of the Americans and the Israelis to destroy that government. Uh-huh. So it's basically, yes, Israel does not want a renewed joint comprehensive plan of action. And I think that if that happens, then people might start asking, well, why doesn't something like this apply to Israel with its hundreds of atomic bombs, great amounts of poison gas, and vast amounts of deadly bacteria?
Thank you very much for that. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. Let me thank our guest, author and former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman there. Thank you for your comments. Marcus Papadopoulos, thank you, historian, analyst, and author there from London. And at the top of the spotlight, we had Mona Kandil, correspondent from Ramallah. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the Spotlight. Thanks for tuning in. For Mikko Vitale, entire team is goodbye.